Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. We are in the home stretch of summer and peak vacation season, which has contributed to relative market calm so far in August. Investors did have to digest important economic data last week and their implications for Fed monetary policy. So joining me here on this Monday morning to discuss these topics and what it means for your portfolio, glad to welcome back from UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS FSI, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas, Jason Dreho. Jason, good Monday morning to you. Welcome back, and thank you for joining our listeners and our clients here on this Monday morning.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. Good to be here again.
So with that, Jason, let's get right into it, beginning with inflation and retail sales data, which we did receive last week. What does that data say about the state of the economy today?
Well, look, about a month ago, a few weeks ago, the concern was the economy is maybe at risk of being too hot. The data from last week for both the July retail sales and the inflation data suggests, in fact, an economy that is moderating, that is cooling, you know, overall. Starting with the retail sales, kind of part of the growth narrative, the data was well below expectations, which would suggest after a below expectations a July jobs report that perhaps the economy is actually slowing quite significantly. Like the jobs report, the details matter. So the retail sales data, the headline number was bad, but there were some kind of caveats to that story. There were some seasonal quirks in that, you know, Amazon Prime Day happened in June of last year versus July, or happened in June this year versus July. That boosted June at the expense of July. So on a year-over-year basis, that, you know, puts July this year at a disadvantage, that hurt. The World Cup, you know, that's a lot of spending in June, so that likely maybe pulled forward some new travel and expenditure in June from July. So again, sort of, you know, shifting from a calendar perspective, some of that spending makes look at July kind of a weaker than it otherwise would be. You know, overall, the report was still mixed. It wasn't a good report, but not necessarily as bad as the headline data suggests. What's also relevant is that, you know, more high frequency data, you know, the credit card spending continues to be quite strong that we have it going into, you know, to August. Not a, you know, notable slowdown. There also appears to be evidence that the so-called K-shaped consumer economy is starting to morph into a C-shaped. So the K-shaped idea is that high-income consumers, their spending growth is rising rapidly. Low-income consumers' spending growth was much more tepid, you know, barely growing at all. There's real bifurcation in the economy. What the more recent data suggests is that the lower-income consumers are starting to increase their spending, you know, at a more significant rate to match essentially the growth rates of high-income consumers. So that bifurcation of the K, now you're seeing the bottom part of that K is tilted higher, that hence the C shape, or the term of a C shape. And it's not due to like increased spending out of savings. It looks like it's more kind of, you know, increased kind of, you know, wage growth for the real wage growth for that bottom tier. This is a positive for the, you know, as if it's a fundamental driver that's gonna be more lasting, that's positive for the overall growth outlook. On the labor market data we got, you know, over a week ago, below expectations, but the three-month average of job growth of around 20,000 is kind of in line with what economists would think is this is the sort of trend level of job growth that we need in order for the unemployment rate to stay stable. You add it all up, you know, and roll in also AI CapEx spending, which has been a big driver of growth this year, coming out of Q2 earnings season where the guidance was strong, and also companies are demonstrating some monetization benefits that reinforces this, you know, kind of a positive narrative on this AI investment being played out. That should continue. So we're left with a growth environment, you know, not spectacular, but solid, likely to be around 2% the rest of the year. And I can describe it as relatively benign. Pivoting to inflation, that, you know, also was probably the better story last week. The inflation data came in basically in line with expectations or even slightly below, which means that we've seen a kind of a clear rollover from core inflation measures from their peak in May. Now we have 2 months of improving data. Various kind of leading indicators for August would suggest that August data should also be kind of in line, similar level, in line with expectations, and similar to the July data. If that's the case, then we have 3 months in a row of relatively good inflation data. And some of the more structural factors, such as new disinflation from shelter, it looks like it's going to continue. Wage growth is moderating, so longer term, that is not an inflationary impulse, especially for kind of the services part of the economy. And once you look at other measures of kind of key inflation measures, aside from core PCE, which is what the Fed focuses on, such as trim inflation, things of that sort, they're all kind of lower than core PCE. So all that suggests that inflation is moving in the right direction. So you add it all up, I'd say the macro conditions are not Goldilocks, not necessarily kind of reflation so much anymore. So it's kind of relatively benign. And benign is not a bad situation at all for the U.S. economy at this point in time.
Now, Jason, in terms of how this all translates to monetary policy, what does this latest batch of economic data mean for the Fed policy outlook from here?
Well, in our view, it reinforces the view that the Fed is going to stay on hold this year, not hike rates. And the next move is more likely to be a cut than a hike starting the spring of next year. The market pricing is a shift in that direction. As of this morning, on Monday morning, the market is pricing about a 30% chance of a hike in September and a cumulative probability of 90% chance of a hike by December of this year. This is pretty significant. You know, late July before the last FOMC meeting, the market was pricing more than one full hike by September and a total of about 2.5 hikes into the middle of next year. So it's significant for repricing those expectations as well. The inflation data has kind of continued to be kind of improving, but also the economic data, the growth data, especially in the labor market, suggests, you know, some softening or certainly not kind of a reacceleration of growth. Now, the next risk event to watch that could alter this, you know, this kind of outlook is on Friday, August 28th, when Fed Chair Kevin Warsh will give a keynote speech at the Jackson Hole Central Bank Symposium. You know, he may continue to be relatively opaque or not provide guidance and not even indicate his kind of overall framework, which is, you know, the case for his first two appearances as Fed Chair during the press conference at the FOMC meeting. But there was a report in the Financial Times about 10 days ago that suggested, and this might come from sort of, you know, some, you know, insider at the Fed, that he's going to use that speech to explain his intellectual framework behind his sort of, what do you call it, kind of communications revolution, try to clarify what he believes in his own messaging shortfalls. So I think what the market is looking for is maybe some, not guidance on what the Fed will do in September and beyond, but more of like, what is the framework and what are the reaction function that Warsh himself is actually using to form policy. At the moment, given what Warsh has said versus what he's done, the market sort of reviewing that is ultimately he's willing to tolerate it. So maybe a high-pressure economy, run a little bit hot, because ultimately he does seem to believe that over the long term, all this investment in AI will be disinflationary, and he doesn't want to kind of cool the economy and sort of bring that to a halt, you know, shortly. So that's kind of, you know, the what could transpire in roughly 10 days from now. That is a risk event. Ultimately, though, the data itself, we, you know, believe it's consistent with the fact that Fed won't hike, and as we get the August data in a few weeks, if it comes in similar to what it's July, I think those chances for September hike go even lower, and the window for the Fed to hike at all in, you know, any point in the near term starts to become smaller and smaller.
Now, Jason, I did mention towards the beginning that the market recently has been relatively calm. Now, you do discuss that in your latest blog, which is titled Hollandaise. So can you speak a bit to the meaning behind the calmness in the markets we've been witnessing as of late? And what exactly do you mean by that title of your latest blog?
Well, just on the market itself, you know, we've seen equities and risk assets kind of grind higher throughout the month. Last week was a little slower pace, but it was still directionally positive. I think what is more noteworthy, this ties into the relative calm point, is that the VIX volatility index fell to 14.25 on Friday. That's the lowest level it's been all year. It was a little bit lower right at the beginning of January. It obviously rose back in March, but that's a relatively low level. We've seen other volatility for individual stocks, like single stocks, also come down. So what's driving this kind of relatively low volatility? Well, part of it is the benign macro that I mentioned. Part of it is, you know, the market's not expecting, you know, maybe the Fed to hike in the way they did before. Really good earnings, that certainly kind of boosted, you know, your confidence, as well as some of the guidance from these companies and how they're monetizing AI can use to sort of support the idea that, you know, a lot of CapEx will get sort of compensated, financing will still be available, that strain can continue for a while. And then, you know, I think geopolitics, you know, has become a little bit sort of a back burner issue. You know, the situation with the conflict between the U.S. and Iran, you know, continues to simmer, you know, case to escalate, but we're not seeing big moves in the price of oil. The oil prices are staying relatively contained. It does seem like any escalation tends to be relatively temporary, even if we're not getting to the ceasefire. So if that is a form of gridlock between the U.S. and Iran, the markets will actually, you know, take that. I think that's helping to kind of, you know, provide some calm. This is something I discussed in the blog in kind of more detail, along with some of the other points I've made on kind of the Fed and growth. The reason why I titled it Hollandaise, it's an echo back to the 2023. And if you remember 2023, the summer, that was the summer of Barbenheimer, you know, Oppenheimer and Barbie kind of, you know, combined into one. It was the summer of, you know, Taylor Swift and Beyonce, these sort of, you know, massive tours across the country, like these big cultural events. And there's sort of echoes to this year culturally to that, but also economically, I think, that are relevant. And if those parallels would continue for the rest of the year, it perhaps suggests, you know, I think a relatively, you know, positive outlook for the rest of the year. Now, a couple of key things that happened in 2023 that sort of have echoes this year, you know, sort of history of rhyming, not necessarily repeating, is that, you know, at the beginning of 2023, the consensus expectations amongst economists is that ultimately the U.S. economy will probably go into a recession, maybe a mild recession. That did not happen. You know, the U.S. economy grew 2.9% in 2023. And in the summer of 2023, when all that was going on, the cultural phenomena stuff, the U.S. economy ultimately grew 4.7% in the third quarter of that year. U.S. growth this year has been more kind of closer to what was expected at the start, even though oil prices have gone higher. The real upside surprise has been on corporate earnings. They've been far exceeded what was expected at the beginning of the year, and that's kind of helped from a fundamental perspective of the outlook. The other thing that sort of parallels is the rise in interest rates. You know, the Fed was hiking rates for the first half of the year in 2023, culminating with one final 25 basis point hike in July of 23. Then the Fed went on hold. As this happened, as the, you know, markets have realized we're not going to get a recession, and the economy is quite strong, you saw yields go quite a bit higher. At some point from a peak, from a trough to peak, the 10-year treasury yield went up 150 basis points, ultimately peaking around 5%. This year, we've seen sort of similar rise in rates from a higher base and not as high a peak, going up of about 50 basis points, you know, from the lows back in March. Again, it's sort of expectations about a relatively strong economy, maybe some overheating if persisted. The general thing about 2023 is that ultimately that inflation didn't really materialize. It started to come down, and the Fed ultimately kind of pivoted and went on to an extended pause. That latter scenario is something that we think will ultimately kind of, you know, play out. As I discussed, the inflation data is likely to moderate, the Fed's likely to stay on hold. As market pricing then goes from pricing in those hikes to not pricing maybe any hikes, maybe the next move is being cut, we think that will provide a sort of a tailwind, you know, between now and year-end, similar to what happened in 2023. So culturally, there's some echoes, but there's some interesting dynamics in terms of growth expectations, in this case, earnings far exceeding what was assumed at the start of the year, rates going higher initially, kind of spooking the market, but ultimately kind of coming down. And we think that similar dynamic is likely to play out in the second half or the remainder of 2026.
Before we wrap up, let's conclude, as we always do, by providing our listeners with some investment recommendations. So as we're recording here on Monday, August 17th, what are your key messages for the balance of the summer and the rest of 2026?
Well, before I get to that, I realized I didn't actually explain the Holland Days title. Given the echo that I just alluded to in terms of 2023 of Barbenheimer, we don't have a similar mashup of movie titles, but we do have two movies that have dominated the summer, The Odyssey and Spider-Man. The common feature of that, Tom Holland, the actor. So instead of Barbenheimer, it's Holland Days this summer. That's the title. So in case you were puzzling over that, Dan, I wanted to clarify. In terms of the key message, very near term, there's not a lot of a key risk events. You know, we get maybe the Jackson Hole speech from Kevin Warsh in 10 days. NVIDIA reports earnings a couple days before that. Absent debt-like information, you know, relatively benign markets that are moving higher tend to continue to moving higher. Bigger picture through year-end and into 2027, the macro environment being relatively benign is supportive. The earnings story is even more supportive. Just for perspective, at the beginning of this year, the bottoms-up analysts consensus forecast for earnings growth for the S&P 500 in 2026 was about 13%. Now around 27% based on the earnings through Q2 and the guidance going forward. And based on the guidance, you know, we'd expect that earnings are going to grow about 20% in the second half of this year. And for 2027, somewhere in the low to mid-teens. So very strong earnings growth. And this is relatively broad-based. We've seen this in the earnings season, that it's not just a handful of tech companies that are driving things higher. The median company have an earnings growth of around 12%. We expect that earnings to continue to be brought in out of the market that's been going on. We've seen this with small caps outperforming for the past couple of months. The equal weight S&P 500 index has outperformed. EM equities outperformed. So we kind of lean into that, leading to more cyclical sectors. Still like, you know, tech, but just from a broadening perspective, that's something to continue to expect that theme to play out. In fixed income, and we expect, you know, yields to decline as those market views on rate hikes from the Fed to dissipate. But where we have maybe more conviction instead of where yields are going to go is more at the front end or the intermediate part of the curve, because that's very clear. You can see as hikes get priced out, the 2-year goes lower. been effective over the past month. The 2-year Treasury yield is about 2 basis points lower, whereas the 10-year Treasury yield is about 15 basis points higher. That kind of favors us, kind of short or intermediate parts of kind of the Treasury curve or fixed income overall, avoiding long end rate because, they could go higher if the economy just continues to run hot or turns out to run hot, and sticking with kind of higher quality fixed income overall. And finally, the decline in rates is one factor why gold has had a bit of a bounce in this month. Gold is up about 8 to 9% from hovering around 4,000 for an extended period of time. As rate expectations go lower, particularly as real rates go lower, the opportunity cost of owning gold declines. That's been one of the catalysts for gold to move higher. We're also seeing some investors, particularly institutional investors, like central banks, like the Central Bank of China, have been buying gold. And so now you're seeing investors who didn't really want to touch the metal for a period of time. There's a lot of volatility. Kind of look at this to say there's a kind of maybe a floor in. There's some technical buying, rates are going to go lower. That's sort of a support for gold. Ultimately, we think it is a better than medium-term sort of portfolio diversifier to hedge against the possibility that, Warsh and the Fed do let the economy kind of run hot. There's questions about, the fiscal situation in the U.S. kind of persist. There's concerns about the dollar kind of persist. Gold becomes sort of a medium-term hedge on that. We see good upside over the next 10 months for gold. Near-term, given that we're already materializing, it probably won't be until we actually clearly see the Fed's, kind of hiking expectations go even lower. They're kind of priced out. That would be another catalyst for gold to go higher. But ultimately, I think it's been attractive to diversify in this macro environment overall.
Well, Jason, as always, these conversations to begin a new trading week, always very helpful. So thank you for dropping by again on this Monday morning to keep our listeners informed as to what's driving markets and how to be positioned accordingly. And do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again here soon.
You're welcome.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus for a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS. Please visit our website at ubs.com/cio-disclaimer.